Hello, my name is Maria Munoz, and today is Monday, August 8th, 2011. I am here with Johnny at the University of Florida Samuel Proctor Oral History Project studio, and we're in the Pew Hall of UF's campus. Today I will be conducting an interview for my research project, A Look at Gender Oddities Through Drag Queen Performances in North Central Florida. The title has changed several times, and it might change again, quite similarly to the phenomenon of gender. So my project focuses on female sex bodies, specifically those that embody masculinity. My research will be guided and supported by the real-life experiences of some of those odd bodies living in Gainesville, Florida. Hopefully, like some of those experiences Johnny will be sharing with us today. This interview will be part of the University of Florida Samuel Proctor Oral History Project Digital Collection, and I want to thank you for taking your time to meet with me today. I think we're ready to begin.
Oh, great.
Okay, cool. So first, some general questions. So what is your name?
My name is, my name is Rebecca Ibanez de Paz. I commonly go by Johnny Rocket Ibanez.
Cool. And what is your occupation right now?
I'm a graphic designer / illustrator.
Okay. Yeah. And what is your relationship or marital status or?
I am partnered.
Okay. And what is your race or ethnicity or both?
I am Puerto Rican.
Okay. And when and where were you born?
I was born on October 29th, 1980, in Goleta, California, which is one street away from Santa Barbara.
Okay, cool. And where did you grow up?
I grew up here in Gainesville, since 6 months old.
Okay, cool. And do you have any siblings? And if you do, what are their names and like ages?
I have one brother who is, how old? He turned 37 this year, and okay. His name is Diego.
Cool. And what's your level of education right now?
I have just completed my third college degree.
Okay. All right. So, So, what is your sex and or gender?
My sex is female. My gender is. I don't really do gender.
Okay.
There's not really one that I can identify with readily that anybody's come up with so far, so I just sort of abstain.
Alright. And, what does gender and sex mean to you?
Well, I think, personally, in my I've thought about this particular subject, gender and sex and everything, for going on 10 years now, and read everything I could find under the sun, and I've gone through from periods of being really, really trans. I've been binding and packing and going strictly by he, and, you know, I've been a drag king, I've been fairly feminine, I've gone through sort of every and tried everything. And what I have found, in my opinion and my experience, is that sex is very straightforward. You have some certain parts, you have a certain chemical makeup, you know, scientists found that it's not quite as straightforward as there's X and there's Y and boom, it's like actually on a chromosomal level, we're all transsexual. But, you know, to not get too complicated, sex is very, very straightforward. I have boobs, I have the underparts, I am female, and I personally don't have a problem with that. There's some people who feel very conflicted about that with themselves, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. I am female, and it's not really contested, and everything's been happy. Gender is what I have found, is a combination of sociological, psychological, and behavioral factors that come together to create a social persona through which an individual can both interact with the world, with society, and through which that same individual can have certain parameters by which they can navigate in the world. You know, we can't just have no rules within our self and identity and just go around being internally and personally anarchistic and just go and be happy. Like, you know, generally the human being likes to have certain, likes to have some sort of even just skeletal structure as far as identity and behavioral things go, it makes them feel safer and they know what to do and what rules to follow. So I think that gender serves both of those purposes. I don't think that there's anything biologically inherent about gender at all. I don't think that there, that could, I'm fascinated when people try to argue that, because there is, I personally don't think that there is a gene that says, all right, you're going to be a boy. I also, however, don't think that it's too much of a choice, because personally, if I could have gone through my life not being hated upon, stoned, and not being able to get a good job just because of what I look like and how I act, I would have, that would have been nice. I really would have been okay with skipping that entire ostracizing part of it. So it's somewhere in the middle, and I haven't figured out where exactly in the middle it is, and I'm okay with it at this point. Roundabout answer.
that was good. Okay, and okay, so I'm just gonna jump into it. So, to what extent do you see yourself as a masculine woman?
Well, I don't consider myself a woman at all. I don't consider myself a man. And that I've had very interesting conversations with different people, different queer people of different generations about this same thing. Because, as a bit of a side note, I go to, and this is to illustrate how I feel about it, I go to this writing, lesbian writing retreat. And I've gone to it since before I identified as trans, which I guess generally I identify as, and I've just sort of been grandfathered in, even though technically it is a women's writing conference. And every year I've said, you know, we've talked about it, I'm their token trans person, because everybody's like, oh, it's Johnny Rocket. Johnny's like, poo, we don't want to say no to Johnny Rocket. We love Johnny. Okay, Johnny can stay. Mm-hmm. And then every year we end up having lots of conversations. Because they fought very hard for the ability, this older generation of lesbians and sort of queer women, they fought very hard for the ability to identify for themselves what a woman is, for that power. A woman can be a masculine woman, and they are still a woman. They can be as masculine as they want to be, and they can still consider themselves a woman proudly. And I came along and said, and for that very reason, for the respect I have for the identity that is woman, I'm not going to come along and consider myself a woman. I have no trappings of being a woman. I have no desire to be the trappings of being a woman. It is completely different spiritual, behavioral, sociological thing, and I have no desire to be a part of it. I just don't have no natural inclinations to consider myself a woman, so I don't. And so I sort of consider myself, on the whole, I consider myself sort of non-gendered, because I'm not very masculine either. I'm the sorriest masculine person around. My partner can tell you. I am the least butch female-bodied masculine person you'll ever meet. I am terrible. One of my best friends said that my feminine side is a gay man, she said, and I think that's pretty apt. I mean, I'm sort of in the middle, and I'm not masculine and I'm not feminine. And so, I'm pretty thoroughly androgynous. But my lack of femininity, combined with my body parts, equates me being masculine in this world. And I don't really have a problem with it. I don't care. I've been at this 10 years, like this whole transgender thing, really hardcore for 10 years. I'm 30. I have other things that I'm, you know, that I really need to concentrate on. I have other things in myself that need a lot more work than my gender. Mm-hmm. So I don't worry about it anymore, but because I'm in the particular place I am with my identity, I end up talking about it a lot, because most people are thoroughly and absolutely confused and fascinated about how somebody can so ably and effectively be non-gendered. as me. Like, I look masculine. You meet me, though, and I don't have any of the gender behavioral characteristics that most people have. I don't act in any which way, and people don't usually know what to do with that because they don't really encounter that. So that's sort of how I sit on that. Okay. As far as that goes.
So, I guess I can't refer to you as a masculine woman, but so in what context do you feel that you express yourself as an androgynous woman or an androgynous person, as you just said? Like, how does that affect your relationships and, well, any interactions with, like, other women or other men? Like, is that something that you have to, like, explain all the time, or how does that work out?
Well, it depends. Because I go through periods where I really enjoy confusing people. Because by confusing people, I make them think. People can't make assumptions with me. They just can't. Unless I let them make assumptions. But I go through frequent and long periods where I really want to encourage that. I really want to confuse people as much as possible because I want people to stop making assumptions, and I want people to start paying attention and thinking about each other and thinking about how they're identifying each other without even asking. Like, it's when other people make decisions for me or assume things about me that irritates me. It's a pet peeve, you know? It's the older I get, the more laid back I get, and the more I stop caring about people making assumptions about me. But I've always hated that. It's like, you have no right to assume anything about somebody else unless it's very overt. Like, I can safely assume that your shirt is orange. You are, in fact, wearing an orange shirt. You know, but I can't assume anything else about you unless I ask you. That's just basic respect. And that's being an intelligent human being. That's how you act as an intelligent human being. You ask. It's a good excuse to have conversation. So for the most, a lot of the time, that's sort of where I am. And so that makes for long... Either that makes for people generally just choosing, okay, I'm just going to go over there now and let you do your thing. Or people, and this has actually happened most frequently because I try to surround myself by good people, even if they're strangers, they stop and they ask. And they're like, let's sit down, you and I have some questions. And I love that. That's fine. People can ask me as many questions as they want to. And so it ends up that. And I think that that's also because I guess you can say that my friends have equated me to the bastard child of Pooh Bear and Superman. Like, I tend to have a very specifically and oddly, like, amiable personality, you know? I work on that in myself, and, you know, I very much hone that in myself, is that I want to be approachable, and I want people to be comfortable around me and happy around me, and most often than not, they are within a few minutes, and so they generally have no problem being like, okay, who are you? What are you? And asking very personal questions. Then I'm like, you know, I'm teaching people, so people go away from me more enlightened than they came at me, so I'll be a walking exhibit. That's cool. Sorry, I babble a little bit too.
No, I appreciate that. So then what do you consider your sexual orientation to be? Like, if someone asked you, what would your answer be?
That's actually been something that my partner and I have been... I've been thinking about lately, and then my partner has been thinking about, because if I'm not a woman, then I'm not a lesbian, necessarily. I have no problem with that. I really have no problem not identifying myself at all. I really don't see... I mean, I don't have a problem building community, you know, without the use of specialized groups like that. You know, you specialize yourself in a group like, I am a lesbian, and I'm going to engage with other lesbians, and I'm going to create my social identity around this being a lesbian or being a writer or being a this, and then you don't get to know a lot of other people. So I'm not really easily identifiable. I guess I would say I'm queer. But I don't generally identify in a very specific way. Because not identifying myself has no bearing on the fact that I have zero interest in dudes at all. Like, biological guys, it's just not there. Maybe there's a gene, maybe there's not. I don't know what it is, but... So the fact that I don't... Identifying myself in a certain way doesn't really affect that, so I generally don't. I guess I would say I'm queer.
Okay. So in being queer, in your thoughts on gender, so in what terms do you think of an experience? Like, do you think about an experience, your body, like your body's appearance, your body in a sexual way, like, how do you think about that?
How do I think about...
Like, in terms of like, gender or your lack of gender and things like that. Like, how do you think about your body and how you experience your body?
Oh, in that context?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because at first I had it here as masculine, but I want to respect...
Oh, that's cool. You're
not being mad. Oh, no, but I'm going to do it, so I'm trying. So when I look at my questions, I kind of have to reword them. So, so like, in terms of this, of being queer and of being genderless, how do you think about your body? Does that make more sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting question. Because my experiencing my body and my relationship with my body, It's like I grew up in a very matriarchal Puerto Rican family with and this is gonna come around and make sense in a second, with a very, very opinionated, old-fashioned Puerto Rican grandmother, Baptist Puerto Rican grandmother. She's 80 something right now, so she comes from a society where women look a very specific way. If they can look like J-Lo, more power to you. Only don't wear such, you know, racy clothing, and you'll be fine. But, you know, you even the smallest bit of not perfect slimness, it's just her society, it's her upbringing, you know? So I grew up in a family where all the women have really big body issues, because we grew up in Hispanic society, Puerto Rican society in specific. Your greeting is always, when you greet each other, generally, you go, hey, how are you doing? Oh, wow, you've lost weight. Oh, wow, you've gained weight. Oh, honey. You know, like, when grandma used to walk around and, like, pinch the space that you're under your chin like that. Ay, nena, está gordita. You know, I mean, you grow up.
Yes.
And then, like, it doesn't take too long where you have these horrible complexes about your body. And so there's that. And then there's, no matter what my gender, I grew up being raised as a girl, you know? Until such a point where I could decide for myself. And honestly, if it would have just been my mom, my dad, and I, then it would have been fine, because my mom gave up on trying to feminize me early, early on. I mean, I was, like, 5 years old and fighting those dresses she was trying to put me in. She fought back as a side note, with this really fugly blue flower bodysuit with frills that I wore until they were, like, halfway up my forearm. And she's like, you are wearing that to every family event. She gave up eventually. If it would have been just us, then it would have been fine. But, you know, I grew up being given Barbie dolls and then with a society which creates more body issues for any, you know, remotely female or feminine person. It's just like, you don't look like Christie Brinkley? What the fuck's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then comes along that by the time I started thinking about my gender thing, I had so many body issues as it was that didn't have any space to come in. You know, it's just like, you know, I didn't... I already... All my body issues were already... We're already you know, taken, or the dibs were already taken by my upbringing, by society. It's just like, no, you're going to have terrible body issues because you're going to feel like every other female in this society, and in Puerto Rican society, you're going to feel that you're ugly as sin because you're fat, and you're going to worry about your thighs and your hips and your stomach, and you're going to obsess about this, even though you're perfectly fine, but, you know, and you're going to have psychological issues about this until, you know, like, so by the time gender came along, there wasn't really any space for any more reasons to have complexes. Yes. I, as far as the gender thing went, to be honest, I was surrounded when I was coming up, and this, even when I was trans, when I was binding and packing and doing that, and surrounded by so many tranny boys, I mean, so many of the masculine females that I've known throughout my life have transitioned and gotten surgery and everything. I mean, uncountable amounts, most of them. And even being surrounded by that, even going to the degree of binding and this and that, I mean, I've felt indifferent, mostly indifferent about my body most of my adult life. And so I thought about it, and I thought, I had a while where I thought really long and hard, okay, you know, I had this decision to make, you know, most of my trans friends are getting surgery and raising the money to me, and I, as a trans person, do have that decision to make. Like, do I feel that way? Do I want to go to that degree? Do I want to go in the opposite direction? Do I want to, you know? And it came along with the decision to sort of be gender neutral for the most part and just skip the entire gender thing, where it's just like, you know what? I think like most females, you know, I would like a six pack, but other than that, I really don't care. I really don't mind my makeup, you know? Like, I would love to look like Pink, but I'm not gonna. Yeah. And other than that, I don't mind my parts. It's a lot of trouble to go to get the surgery and this and that. If you're gonna do it, I figured if you're gonna, you know, you should really have issues with the body that you're in. There's some people who really feel very strongly that it just doesn't fit. They're not able to express their identity, their natural inclinations, without getting surgery. For me, it was opposite. I realized, I was glad I didn't get surgery because, you know, I was able then to actually more honestly translate who I want to be in this world by leaving them. Because by leaving them, I am absolutely confusing. And by leaving them, people can't make assumptions about me. If I got surgery, then it's straightforward. Everything matches. You know, like, men are more able to be gender neutral, in a sense, than women are able to. You know, with women, you're either feminine or you're butch. Men, it's like, you know, unless you're macho, or, you know, it's just sort of somewhere in the middle. It's not really an issue. So people can't make assumptions about me, you know? Like, I'm masculine, and then I have boobs, but then I'm not butch. I don't act like a butch, you know, quote unquote. And so it's just throws everybody off. So that's sort of where I'm at now. It's just like,
okay, well, that kind of answers, like, a later question that I was going to have, but just to make sure, I'm going to ask it anyways.
Okay.
But, so, have you ever considered SRS? Because I think you just answered that with your explanation.
Yeah, I have, and I did consider it. That was my decision, like, with that, you know, I decided, it's like, I thought that having pecs would be cool, but I didn't really care enough, and that's really expensive, and it really, man, that would have had, it has a lot of consequences with the family, and when you do, you really have to be committed. Mm-hmm. Like, you really have to Definitely. Want it to accept the consequences and the repercussions throughout your entire life, and I didn't really feel that strongly about it. The testosterone is really interesting. I thought that was really funny, because I did consider it briefly, because I thought, damn, it would be cool to have, be able to, easily be able to have muscles.
So you
and
have,
to no, I've considered it. I've considered it, but I've never done it. When I was thought about it, it's just like, it's really tempting, because so many people when they so many of my friends, it's like they go on T and it's just like, you know, their body just sort of evens out as far as just fitting with their identity. You know, it's just like they're able to get goatees, they're able to, you know, like, be more, you know, more muscly if they want to. If they go to the gym, it doesn't take 5 years to, you know, get some abs or whatever. I mean, it's just, like, these superficial, you know, things. But, again, then I realized I didn't care enough. Two, I'm needle phobic. I hate needles. Like, shots, can't stand them. I really don't like them. I think it's, like, these far from being an actual phobia. Like, I hate getting shots. And that's getting shots all the time.
Yeah.
And two, I noticed the body hair in my mom's side of the family, which is where your hair patterns come from. Mm-hmm. And the body hair patterns on every single male on my mom's side of the family, which I would have gotten, is that they go bald and then they turn into gorillas from the neck down. And I really didn't want to do that. That's not cute.
No.
That is not cute. I did not want to turn into a bald gorilla. I have no intention to. My brother can take care of that, and he is very ably. Bless his heart. He's taking care of that all his own. I was perfectly having a good head of hair and relatively low body hair count in the rest of the place, so that's sort of where I was at about that.
And now I'm going to piggyback off of something you said earlier, and you said that you had a lot of friends that have undergone sexual reassignment surgery, mm-hmm. and although this doesn't, like, directly affect you or have anything to do with you, but I just want to know, and some of your friends, how do they feel now that they've gone through their, like, sexual reassignment surgeries? Because I've met a lot of people that are content, mm-hmm. and some people are not so content afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say, like, the general feeling is, or for your friends?
I think that one really, really interesting thing that I've noticed about all my friends that have transitioned is when they transition, like, most of the time when they've transitioning and embodying then a relatively male body has allowed them to be more feminine. And so, like, I have one friend in particular that was super butch, like, super, super trans, binding, and, you know, really, really working on that identity and putting forth that identity every moment of every day. And then he went and he got on T and he got his, you know, his top loft off. And now he's, like, a super queer, you know? Like, he's just super queeny queer, like, radical fairy queer, you know, like that. Those hippie fairy queer mm-hmm. queers that get, like, the asymmetrical non-haircuts and, you know, with the
colors,
super radical. And that's where he's at now. And he's totally, I mean, he goes around in drag and, you know, like, dressed in tutus with eye makeup and fairy dust and whatever, like, all the time just to mess around. But, and you look at him and it's just like you notice why. It's because he's absolutely 100% comfortable in his masculinity now. He fits his body, you know, like, he's, you know, and so really he was able to really let go and just relax and just be himself. And that self is a man who, a queer, fairy, radical queer, you know, multi-gendered man. And a lot of friends I've noticed sort of to one degree or another and in certain one way or another, basically that has happened. I've noticed is that they've, at least with my group of friends that I've noticed and people that, acquaintances that I know, is that they get surgery, they get on T, and they're sort of able to relax and put down the super macho, super masculine act and just relax into a very comfortable, usually a very queer masculinity. You know, I have a couple of friends that go all the way and they're like, no, oh no, we're dudes. And, you know, they, like, go to the gym and they're like, dudes. Like, I have one friend who got surgery and got, and it was like on T and everything, and he's just the most amiable, very comfortably masculine sort of rednecky guy, you know? Like, he's just, and he's like, you look at him and it's just like, there's not ever a time in either of our lives that you could have ever been female. Like, it's just doesn't, you look at him and you're like, that's just, you can't imagine it, you know? And so he fits himself so well now. It's just like, he's just this guy next door, you know, who rides a Harley and has really awesome mutton chops and a bald head, you know, but whatever.
Right.
So that's sort of what I've noticed with my friends.
So good, a positive reaction.
Yeah, that's good. And a very interestingly positive reaction, that whole, like, it's like, you know, you transition, you get surgery, you're a guy now, and so that allows you to be queer and semi-fairy and radical and just relax and less masculine than you were before. That's a very interesting way.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so... Can you share a time, or, I mean, have you ever even experienced it, any hardships, like discrimination, disrespect, when interacting with, like, other lesbian and gay individuals that are not gender nonconforming? You know, like, do you feel a part of the LGBT community? You know, like, how... Kind of your thoughts on that?
Not really, mm-hmm. because, you know, bless their hearts, they try. They ask questions, and...
They,
like, the lesbian, like, specifically, honestly, the Gainesville community, and but other communities, too, you know, like, at the writer conference, for example. Mm-hmm. At least the older community, I think it comes down to, and then I'll explain, it comes down to, what was I going to say? How do I put it? People can try their hardest to ask you and come to you on your grounds, like, let you identify yourself, and that's how they'll identify you. And then some people will try, and they'll try, and they'll try, but they still have their own context. They still have their own paradigm that they, and framework that they live in and that they see the world in. And it's just, they don't notice when, even though they're trying, they still come at you from there. And they think that they're coming at you and coming to on your turf.
Right.
And but they're still calling you a woman, and they're still treating you like a woman and regarding you as a woman. And even if they don't, they try not to say it so overtly, they are still, you're obviously, they are treating you like a lesbian. And, oh, it's okay, I know it's a women's only event, but it's okay, you can come. Why is that okay? I'm not a woman. Why in the world would that be okay? And you don't, and then, you know, it's like, you don't even notice right now that that is disrespectful towards me. This is identity that I choose. You should be respecting that by saying, you know, you're right, you can't come, it's a women's only event. Why would you be able to come? It's not like my brother can come. And so it's that. It's that, like, you know, it's not malicious. I know it's never malicious. It's very rarely malicious. I'm lucky enough that I don't know if it's just that I don't get it to my face or what, or if it just, I'm nice enough and just people hate calling Pooh Bear an asshole. You know, I don't know what it is, or if, I don't know. But I know that that happens constantly. That happens most of the time. Where my friends, the people who then I choose to make my friends, well, they're my friends because they're able to let go of their context and open up and actually, you know. But the greater community, you know, it happens an unfortunate amount where it's just like, I mean, yeah, you're trans, sure. That's just another word for butch woman, right? Okay, that I'm comfortable with that, you know? And they don't notice it, but yeah, that's how it is all the time. And for me, I'm just sort of at this point, I'm like, again, I don't really care. There's a few people who I care about, how they treat me and see me, and it's because they treat me and see me well, and they see me for who I am, and everybody else can fuck themselves. I don't care. I'm not invested. And it's my friends, usually, that get really pissed off about it. Really pissed off about it in some cases, and it's just so sweet. It warms my heart.
Like, they try to defend you.
Yeah, and they get offended on my behalf, where it's just like, you don't see Johnny. You see who you want to see. You have constructed who you want Johnny to be. You're very invested in that persona. You know, I'm a public persona, whether I like it or not, or understand it or not. I'm a public persona in this town, and they want to see me a certain way, and I think we do this constantly, and we don't notice when we are imposing our own identity on that person, even though that person has repeated over and over, no, this is my identity. You know, if you ask what pronoun to use and I say use both, it's because I want you to use both, not because it's okay for you to only use she or you only use he. No, I want you to put forth the effort, dig into yourself, and use both. go back and forth. And they don't. And they're like, oh, so Johnny doesn't care. Johnny can be a woman if I want Johnny to be a woman. So
in allowing that freedom, had, like, that's interesting that you would allow the freedom to let somebody call you a woman or call you a man. Like, you don't care if they use he or she interchangeably.
As long as it's inner. I mean, and then again, sometimes I go through periods where I want it to be he. You know, there's some groups where I want it to be he. I never want it to be she. Like, only she. That has a lot of baggage and connotations that I'm not comfortable with because, again, I don't like assumptions. So, most of the time I go by he. You know, most of the time, and most of my friends understand exactly what I mean by that. That it's not that I'm being a guy, it's that if I'm he, that erases all assumptions. It's like, wait a minute, I'm going around, usually today I'm dressed very casually because mm-hmm. it's raining and I'm sweating, but most of the time I have normally fitting shirts, I don't bind, I'm going around with, you know, a Puerto Rican female body, you know, and I say Puerto Rican because I have Latin proportions, and so when I wear form-fitting shirts, it's like, this go-around, it's like, okay, short hair, boobs, no package, okay, I one thing is happening in my mind, okay, oh yeah, this is Johnny, he is a blah blah blah, it's like, oh, wait, okay, now I'm confused, and again, we go back to the confusion, and that's what I want. Sometimes, though, when it takes too much effort and I have other things to be worried about, you know, I'm go like, you know what? Go with both. Consciously go back and forth. Why not? You know, really, I believe in you enough to think that you have the ability to let gender go in your mind when it comes to me. Try it. Just try it. Try not to see me in a gendered term. Use both genders. Why? Because none apply, so therefore use all of them. Gender neutral pronouns are stupid. I'm a linguist. I don't like them. So use both of them we have. It's kind of a way of being non-gendered. Most people can't handle that, though, so I go for he.
Okay. So then do you appreciate the notion of, like, genderless pronouns? Like, Feinberg, she's come up, or Z has come up with, like, Z and here and those things?
I like the concept. Mm-hmm. I respect the concept and the attempt. But speaking as, I'm beyond my right and my graphic design and anything else. At my heart, the closest identity that I go by, that I've chosen, that's closest to who I am integrally, is a writer. I'm a language person. I'm a poet, you know, mm-hmm. above anything else, I'm a poet. I'm a linguist. Both of my parents got PhDs in linguistics. I took classes in linguistics. I didn't get a major in it, but I'm a linguist. Linguistically speaking, the ones that they have come up with are not linguistically sound. People are not going to go around saying here when it's spelled and like her. It's just, they don't work. They don't go by the linguistic societal rules, which inevitably lead to a common usage. Z doesn't work. That's the closest, I guess, but it's still, it's too much Z. It's a lot of effort to say, you know, like, going into linguistic scientific mode for a hot mm-hmm. second, as a linguist, I don't like them. They don't make sense. Here and sheer and this and that. And once, if they ever come up with one that makes sense, I'll use it. But English is a clumsy language anyways. Like, yeah. You know, there's plenty of other languages that they have 10,000 words for gender and for gender neutral objects and this and that. And
right.
English just kind of blows.
You know. So I guess we can shift a little bit into, like, your childhood memories and things like that. So I don't know if you want to go specifically, like, if you want to offer, like, a childhood memory having to deal with, like, maybe your negotiations or affirming to yourself, like, yeah, you know, you don't belong in a gender category. Maybe not as, you know, as well as you can describe it now, like, maybe mm-hmm. your description of it back then, like, what you thought mm-hmm. when you were younger, you know, like, even going through, like, elementary school, if you felt it then, or even, like, middle school or high school, because,
sure.
I mean, I'm sure it's different for everyone, you know?
Sure. Well, I guess it would be two-part with the childhood. Like, on one hand, I never, ever fit in. Not even my earliest memory did I ever fit in with anybody. I grew up, my parents have a restaurant, a local restaurant, and so I grew up at the restaurant. And I tried to make friends with people my age. I made a few. I made, like, a handful throughout grade school, but not really. I never fit with them. The people that I liked the most, that I tried to spend my most time with, were the employees at the restaurant, specifically the kitchen people. I think there was something irreverent about them and about their occupation that I really enjoyed. And there were these two people, just to illustrate, there was these two individuals that would come to the restaurant. One was a queer lesbian radical artist who was like 60 years old with hot multicolored mohawk, and like this radical lady who I absolutely adored. And then this other guy who I think was a veteran, and he had one foot like a good like solid half a foot shorter than the other, and he was just like, and they used to both come to the restaurant at different times, like individually, and I most of the time, if I wasn't in school, I was there because my parents were there 24/7. I would be in my grandparents' house sometimes, you know, but a lot of the time I would be there. And so whenever they would come, I would sit with them, and I was able to understand them and be understood by them better than, you know, like it was people in the like 40 years older than me most of the time. I was talk philosophy with them and taught them crossword puzzle with them. And that's when my dad knew that he had an odd duck in me. So there was that I never, for a multitude of reasons, related to who I am, I never fit in with my peers, and, you know, in school or anything. It was my family and the restaurant, you know, my cousins, you know, we're odd ducks together, so we all got along swimmingly. And and then in terms of gender growing up, I was the ultimate tomboy growing up. You know, I'm the one that, if you look at that Thomas, like, yeah, it makes sense. We knew you were going to grow up to be a boy, you know, like, it was like one of those, it's like, you're either going to grow up to be a boy or a sorority girl. Like, it usually goes one way, or, you know, like tomboys, and then they grow up, or maybe that's always Hollywood. I don't know.
Probably,
but
both.
That's, yeah, most of the time that's in Hollywood movies, very heartwarming Hollywood movies. You know, she might be a tomboy, but she can still be saved and be a good part of society.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, my family used to try to put me in dresses, and, like, I would always get, and not from my parents above the age of, like, 5. They surrendered that they had it to the fact that they had an odd duck for an offspring, and they just sort of let me be who I am. But the rest of my family, which is, like, half an island worth of people in my semi-immediate family, because, you know, they would, like, you know, give me Barbie dolls for presents and, you know, just treat me like one of the little girls in the family and this and that. And, you know, really, really try. Really try. But the reality is that I wanted to play G.I. Joes and climb trees. And when me and my cousins went off and played pretend and played, like, X-Men and you know, stuff like that, it's like, no, I was Wolverine. You know, like, it's like that. I was a really stereotypical little tomboy, you know, when I was a kid. You know, like, just unapologetically. And there was nothing really, how would I put it, mixed about it. Like, I was very straightforwardly the stereotype of a little tomboy, you know, when I was a kid. You know, like, just sort of run around with grass stains on my knees. I didn't think I was a boy or anything. I just didn't think about it at all. You know, and because at home, like, again, with my parents are ex-hippies, you know, they were like, after a while, my mom gave up on the idea of having a you know, little white-dressed little girl. It's like, you know, this is my kid, and I love my kid, and she's a strange kid, but God love her.
She's mine.
She's mine, and I'm gonna take her as she is. And so they just accepted me and let me do my thing, for the most part. And it was the rest of my family that we would just sort of have to be like, all right. But when you grow up with your parents having a certain attitude and acceptance about you, even though the rest of the 40-odd people that I interacted with most of my time, you know, very, very frequently, day to day and week to week, just sort of like, you had a buffer in a way. It's just like, my two most important people in my childhood accept me for who I am, and everybody else can go suck an egg. Preferably a rotten one, I don't care. And so I used to mutilate my Barbie dolls in G.I. Joe battles and sort of take my little revenge that way. Get grass stains on that little blue bodysuit that I told you about. Mm-hmm. Grass stains all up and down. It was awesome. I used to, like, slip and slide on storm grass. It was great. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of growing up.
So then you keep mentioning, like, your family and stuff. So how do you think your ethnicity... your ethnicity affects your gender identity? Like, does it add pressures and stuff like that for your family, to you in your, you know, in your identity, and to your family accepting you, even though you've mentioned that your nuclear family is really accepting of you, but then your family isn't? Like, did they find it hard to accept you? Do they even accept you now? Like,
Yeah, I mean, there has been, and to a degree after now, it's like, now I'm 30 years old, and they're all sort of like, well, you know, Johnny is who Johnny is. But, you know, for the most part, growing up, you know, up until, for the most part of my life, yeah, there's pressure. There's definitely, I mean, the Latin culture is a lot more hyper-gendered than I think a lot of other cultures are, and any transgendered, queerly gendered person that grows up in Latin culture, I think, usually says the same thing, which is just like, yeah, you know, in a hyper-gendered society where women are women, you know, and men are, then, yeah, there definitely is just a little bit more, at least a little bit more pressure when you don't conform. You're that much more, you stand out that much more, you know? I think that most of, like, the people that I grew up with the most is my mom's family, which is six brothers and a sister, and the sister is gay, and she took most of the brunt when she came out, because she was the first person to come out in her family, and she came out to my grandma, and my grandma is a very old-fashioned woman, and it took her decades to get even neutral about it. Like, we'll agree to disagree because I love you and I don't want to not have a relationship with you, but you know, like, well, let it. And so she took the brunt of that. And so most of my uncles and my aunt, we just sort of have a, I don't really care enough to make an issue out of it, and they love me enough to just accept me, to take me at face value, essentially. So we do, you know, they take me at face value, and I, you know, I don't really, again, at this point in my life, there's other things that I need to make issues out of. So they know that I'm not, you know, that I'm not averagely gendered, and, you know, I know that they know, and they just take me for who I am, and that's lovely. My grandma has, we have come to a very interesting understanding, whereas I understand that she's intelligent enough to observe, you know, and I understand that she probably knows perfectly well that I am gay, and that I'm queer for whatever, however it is that she would say it in her head. She knows that I ain't normal. And she knows that my partner, whom I've brought around to family occasions now for a year, you know, and all the family-only events, and there's my partner, because we've been together for over a year, is female. And so, you know, like, we know. And then my grandma loves her. And I'm convinced that the reason that my grandma loves her and that we get along so well and that everything is coming up roses is because I don't say anything and she doesn't ask. There's no reason to. We have other things to talk about. And some people, I know that some people will be like, oh no, you're still in the closet. But I was like, have you met my grandma? She practically disowned my aunt, and she was her daughter. They're all like this, you know? I don't care. She knows. It doesn't affect our relationship. She doesn't ask about my boyfriend anymore. Or whether I'm going to get married. You know, if she were to ask now, I'd say honestly, it's like, well, maybe someday. Don't ask who. Right. And that's sort of where we're at, is that we just don't talk about it, and that's perfectly okay. And I think she really appreciates not having to go through that a second time. I don't force her to deal with her demons. And then, therefore, she is allowed to just love me, and to love my partner, and to just leave it at that, you know, to love us as people, you know. So that, in a way, that's a very interesting sort of dynamic and outcome, is that because we don't address it, then she doesn't have to deal with her prejudices that she can't, at 80-something years old, cannot deal with. You know, she can't get rid of not of being homophobic. She can't. You know, it was ingrained into her. But we don't talk about it, so she doesn't have to be homophobic. She can just accept me. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, as somebody who deals with language, I'm fascinated by how that works.
Right.
Because it's dependent on the language. Mm-hmm. It's dependent on talking about it. If we don't talk about it, then it's fine.
Or even having the proper vocabulary to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't have a word to use, then you probably think your mention is...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Isn't even real or valid. So mm-hmm. definitely. So then, so within your family or outside of your family, like friends and social interaction or public and stuff, would you consider when you came to affirming your identity, whether it was gendered or genderless as you choose, did you experience it like a coming out situation? Like, did you have to come out and like, did you compare it to that?
I guess in a way, but there wasn't, I mean, I guess in a way, yeah. I didn't, like, come out and say I'm transgendered. I just sort of started showing up dressed a certain way. And when I really started engaging that, the transgendered aspect of it, like, so when I came out, I was already, I mean, since I was 5, I was, you know, I was oddly gendered. I just didn't really... I didn't have the knowledge or recognize the subject matter or anything until I was about 19 or 20. Like, oh, okay, this is trans. But up until then, I was still oddly gendered and everything, and my parents just sort of took me for who I am, and without calling it as such, they accepted that I wasn't a feminine person. Hmm. And you know, they're cool like that. They were fine with it. And then when I guess it's sort of odd just because the reason it all started was just that I met one of my best friends. I met her actually at this writer's conference, and we were hanging around, and it's a very simple question that started getting me asked and getting me thinking about it, and she just asked, by the way, do you mind if I call you he? And that's the first time anybody had asked me that or presented the possibility or anything, at which point, you know, I was like, you can do that? And she... who's like 8 years older than me, had her boyfriend was trans and has since gotten surgery, and she has a bunch of friends that were trans, and she herself is high femme and very, very very comfortable in the trans community of varying people who are trans of various degrees. And so then we got to talking about it, and so at some point I moved to Asheville where she lived. And so I moved there being like, okay, I'm going to engage this whole weird gender more consciously, more intentionally. And so it wasn't really a whole coming out because they got to know me as a transgendered person. And then when I came back home, then it was sort of, people just sort of recognized that I looked different. And then, so it didn't get like, there wasn't a like thing. People just sort of started asking me, so I'm noticing this whole lack of boobage going on. You know, what's that about? Can you, you know, educate me. All my friends were like, educate me, tell me about this. What are you doing? You know, I'm interested. So.
That's good. It's okay, so I'm going to shift it over to, you know, sort of like institutions. Like, can you share like any experiences or differences or any shifts in your interpersonal relationships, like, let's say at work or at school, mm-hmm. like, you know, there's definitely a difference between high school and, like, institutions of higher education.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you ever feel... I guess I'm already asking too many questions. I'm going to stop there. So can you like, share any experiences or differences in these interpersonal relationships?
Sure. Well, at work, I worked for 7 years. Work has always been
mm-hmm.
Because, like, for example, I worked for 7 years in the family business at the restaurant. So, in the interest of choosing my battles and not putting too much energy into it, because it was like a bookkeeping job, like, I didn't really care about it too much. In the interest of sort of choosing my battles and choosing other grounds under which to establish myself and everything like that, you know, I went by my birth name and I just sort of let it be. Like, I'm Rebecca and she, and I'm just like, it's it's not worth it at that point to make this an identity battle, because then it's an identity battle with my family, and then it blows up, and, you know, I'm gonna leave that alone for the bit. And that was that job for the last 7 years. And then it's always sort of a, I think, other than that family business, it's the same in school as in any job anywhere else, where it's sort of, you know, people, it's like, oh, hi, Rebecca. It's like, okay, thanks. You can call me Johnny. What? Like, Johnny? What kind of a name is that? It's my name, and it's what what people call me, so you can go ahead, you can call me Johnny. Everybody does. I would appreciate that. And so, and then other than that, it's sort of the interesting politics of establishing yourself and your identity through action and through your behavior, through your interactions, instead of overtly, outwardly, you know, saying, this is who I am, this is my gender, this is my identity, and finding it in a way more effective to, instead of outwardly say, this is it, to just be it, and be very firm, very obstinate about, this is who I am, and I'm not going to act any differently. And, like, for example, one of my degrees, my most recent one, my dad is the head of the department, so it's sort of, in a way, it was even more important to be like, you know, if I play this very carefully, I can both assert my identity and who I am, and do it in such a way that it doesn't ruffle feathers, which is like, well, there's no problem with ruffling feathers, but if feathers aren't ruffled, generally they'll take it in much easier, you know, that generally before you know it, their mind has been opened and they're accepting who you are. They're more educated, because honey works better than vinegar. And instead of going around, like, and I learned that from my aunt, who is very like, bah, I am gay, you know, if you don't like it, fuck you, bah, you know, and I'm like, let's try something different, you know, this is who I am. And along with being queer and genderqueer and a pretty radical person overall, I'm also consciously trying to be one of the sweetest people you ever will have met. So you really don't have, you know, I always wanted to tell people, it's like, you know, you might want to just give it up now, because in the end, you're really not going to have much of a choice but just to like me. And by liking me, you have to accept me, and then everything's fucked. There goes all your bigotry, and then, so just, let's just skip all that right now and, you know, go have a beer together. And that generally, in a way, ends up happening, is, mm-hmm. you know, people just sort of, they get, like, at school, they got, like, you know, some of the students, I had some friends who were gay, but redneck, you know, very, like, yes, I am redneck, and I'm proud of it. And so they'd be like this one person in particular would be like, just scratching her head and be like, but you're a woman, you're a lesbian, and what's going on with you? Like, and then just slowly be like, let's talk about other things, blah, 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 get to know me. And before you know it, she's like, oh yeah, it's Johnny, whatever. Johnny's cool. Johnny's Johnny Rocket, you know? And so that's been my approach. And it's with institutions like in school and in work and everything. And so I found that works a little better.
So you don't feel like it's ever like held you back or anything like that? Like, that was going to be my next question. Like, at work, do you, I mean, I don't know if you've ever had a job outside of the restaurant business. You know, have you ever felt that you weren't like retained, or maybe you were not promoted, or not even hired, maybe because of your
definitely
identity?
Actually, that's, I'm going through that now, where I'm trying to get I'm unemployed right now. I mean, I'm doing independent contracting, so I'm not completely unemployed, but I want to get a 9-to-5.
Right.
That brings in a salary and everything,
that
and
security. You know?
Yeah, and I'm pretty certain that I'm still unemployed, even with, you know, like, you know, I have a few degrees, I'm multilingual, I'm, you know, really qualified, but I still won't get hired. And it was my partner who, I was baffled about it for a while. It's just like, not to be arrogant, but I'm a pretty good catch for any job. And it's like, and I still won't get hired. And my partner's like, honey, people get really put off by how you look, whether it's right or not. You're, you know, they come and they're expecting one thing, and then they get you. Where as a friend, you're wonderful, but as a job prospect, they don't know what the hell to make of you, and so they don't have any reason to hire. They don't have any reason to hire me if they, other, you know, I had the qualifications, but whoa, you know, what they get is this completely differently gendered package, and it just, with all these other candidates, they're like, we can just choose one of them perfectly easily, and it's really frustrating. You know, so I've gotten passed up for quite a few really awesome jobs lately because of that, you know.
And now, I'm sorry, were you done?
No, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, just another question I never even thought about until you just said right now. So, when you send in your resume, does it say Rebecca or Johnny at the top?
Rebecca.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. For better or worse.
Right. Yeah, right.
Maybe it should say Johnny. Maybe that would make it easier, but then they would be able to do a background check, so.
Right. No, definitely. There's just, there's a lot of difficulties in either direction if you take it, so.
Mm-hmm.
So then, I mean, in any jobs that you've ever had, was it ever hard, like, once you finally did find a job, let's say, mm-hmm. Was it hard to make relationships or create relationships with, like, coworkers, you know, even within the office or outside the office? I mean, whether you care mm-hmm. to or not, you know, because I know some people just, like, I'm work and, sure. like, your personal life are separated, but if you ever found an interest, was it harder or easier?
Well, I definitely am one of the latter, whereas, you know, for the most part, you know, I've had for a long time a really strong community through various jobs and everything. I've been lucky enough to have a really strong community of friends already, so it's, I don't put too much effort in then trying to make my coworkers my friends, unless it naturally, organically happens. But, yeah, I think that it definitely does affect how I've been perceived at work, because it's not just that I have a genderqueer, queer sort of appearance and persona, but because that combined with genetics makes me look like I'm a 16-year-old punk. No matter how I dress, unless I wear a dress, shave my legs, and put on a tiara, I look like I'm a 16-year-old punky little boy at the best of times. And so it really affects how much respect as an adult people have of me. So I've had to learn to really overcompensate for that. You know, you really have to overcompensate and start having some behavioral, sort of certain behaviors to, you know, it's like, well, you're not going to respect me for how I look. So I really have to act in a certain way to establish. And it's really counterintuitive to me because I'm not an alpha personality. I'm a really laid back, you know, what would they call it? Like a beta personality, you know, mm-hmm. like I'm a Taoist. I just sort of roll, but you really have to develop in a certain way, alpha personalities of assert your power right there. And, you know, and so then they'll respect you because they're not going to just by how I look, unfortunately. So it's been a really interesting compensation in that sense, you know. It's like basically having to act like you're wearing a three-piece suit, you know, and you have to act like you're fucking Obama, you know, with your three-piece suit and your normative gender, because you don't, you know. You're a punky queer with tattoos, you know, even when they're covered, that you look like you're 16 years old and you're genderqueer, then people automatically are going to think that you're a moron and that you're immature and that you're incapable, you know. So yeah, it's definitely been a sort of obstacle to navigate, a series of obstacles to navigate, you know, mm-hmm. constantly.
And so this overcompensation, or how do you overcompensate? What aspects about you do you emphasize in order to do that, to kind of feel where you feel now, you know, like, how do you do that?
Well, it's, you know, the whole thing, like, I can have as much confidence in, my abilities and my product, whatever it is that I'm putting forth. It's like, lately, actually, I've been having meetings with a client. I'm working with a client for a website, and it's a bunch of 40-odd, you know, 40-odd-year-old, you know, men, very normative, run-of-the-mill corporate guys, and I've been doing a website for them. And so I come in, and it really is, and I can have as much confidence. I brought them a really awesome website, but because they're gonna look at me and think, oh, I can steamroll this kid, you know, look at them, they're just, you know, they're just a little punk, then it's basically the art of bullshitting. You know, I have to go in there and not only just have confidence, like, yeah, I did a good product. I know I did a good product. I can just talk about this good product that I did and everything will be fine. No, it has to. You have to, I have to go in there acting like it is the shit. I am the best thing since sliced cheese. I went in, you know, I go in there and basically you have to talk like this. Obviously, this is why I did the site this way. Obviously, this is, you know, and just go in there and you're acting, you know, you sit in the seat and you have to sort of deliver what you're going to say, whether it's this product or you're interacting with anybody like in an institution at school or at work or whatever, in order to make them look over, overlook the fact that of how you look, how I look, you know, how this, you know, initial appearance, no matter how I dress, in order to get them to overlook that, basically have to act like, you know, a rather pompous, you know, like, you know, you just have to own it to a degree that it's not really natural to me. You know, I generally move a little bit more organically than that. And so I have to go in there and be like, just like, boom, this is what I have. Obviously you're going to love it. Obviously it is awesome. And obviously I did a good job. You know, I dare you to contest that, you know, like, you know, and just basically act like a, you know, in a way act like a douchey, you know, power-laden corporate dude, because that, you know, you won't come off, I won't come off that way when I do it. I'll just come off just confident enough that they'll be like, oh, okay, all right, I will treat you with equality and respect. It's like, that's not fair that I have to do that. It's not fair, but, you know, it's my choice, you know.
Yeah. So,
sorry for the thing. I noticed that you looked at the thing.
Oh, no. It's like, okay, oh,
that's going to be really loud for whoever is transcribing this.
But I'm sure Deborah will take care of that. Okay, so... So do you think that being masculine, because I can't think of another way of saying it, affords you permission to be someone or something that you otherwise would not be? Like, or what kind of benefits does it afford you?
That's an interesting question. I think that by choosing the gender that I have, or the non-gender that I have, I've had to think a lot more closely about who I am. Because you sort of have more choices, in a sense. You know, you could either, and you know, to put it a little oversimplistically, you can either choose a prepackaged role, which so many people in the society do, where it's just like you're an American woman, you go to a sorority, you dress a certain way, you act in a certain way, you marry a certain type of guy, you know, either a prepackaged role, an identity and everything, or to some degree or another, you could say, no, I'm going to construct myself. I'm going to choose who I am, detail by detail by detail. And I think it's degrees of that. And so for me, I guess I'm obstinate enough that I just, you know what, I'm going to choose, and I've had to choose every detail of who I am. You know, I haven't ever chosen any identity or embodied any identity where it comes with a set of behaviors that automatically comes with it that makes everything easier. You know, and so by proxy, I've spent most of my adult life so far obsessing about this. You know, it's just like, no, if you don't consciously choose these details, like, no, I have these values. I act in this situation, I act this way. And then this other one, I act this way. This is who I am. This is what I like. This is, you know, a lot more sort of conscious choosing of everything in your life than if I don't go around choosing them, then they just sort of, they're chosen for me, and that's happened, and it's just not fun, you know? I don't like it. It ended up for me being sort of a more mindless, lack of attention sort of way of coasting through life. So it's, for me, resulted in needing to stop and really pay attention. Like, no, this is who I am. I'm going to choose every minuscule detail, and I have to. Because I'm not choosing a prepackaged for me. It's like, you know, I have chosen to have a lack of identity in a lot of ways. And so, you know, it's made me sort of think really, really, and it's been awesome because of that. You know, it's resulted in my being. I know that I am a very unique, weird individual. You know, there's nothing common about me because of this. And I like that, you know. I like how it's affected my life. I like how it's educated other people. I like how it's affected the people around me and made them stop making assumptions about people and that sort of thing. So that's been the biggest, I think, positive effect. The way that that itself has shaped my life.
Okay. So then what do you... You're done there. Hmm? You were done with that? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, this might be a little bit repetitive, but let's try it out. So what do you value most about your daily gender performance? Why? And why do you value it the most?
I value the flexibility of it and the sort of lacking of it. Like, I just don't, after a while, and this wasn't true for a long time, but especially lately, it's just become a non-issue. And it's a lot, for me, that is a lot more relaxing. I guess in the way you can equate it to those people that I told you about that transitioned. And then after they transitioned, they sort of relaxed and they were just able to be who they are. That lately I've just really just, you know, like, I don't care, and I've not thought about it. It's not been a thing for a few years now, and I'm just able to be who I am. I've let myself just stop and just let it go and be like, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just who I am. And I've been able to settle into myself better than if gender was still an issue for me, if I was still thinking about it and worrying about it and if it were still a thing. So I really appreciate that, you know, that it's not something that guides my decisions anymore. And, you know, some people won't believe me. They're like, well, look at you. You know, you're wearing shit kicker boots and these torn up jeans, you know, your sleeveless shirts. Obviously, you are acting in a masculine way. Obviously, you're guiding yourself. It's like, well, you know, obviously for you. Me, I'm just comfortable with it. And yes, I'm sure that there's a myriad reasons why it could be argued that I am a naturally, by nature, by even biology, masculine person. I'm sure there is a shit ton of logic and reasoning and studies that could be done that what is behind the fact that I am more comfortable dressed in certain ways. I don't think there's anything gendered about my behavior, but dressed in certain ways and, you know, certain things like that, I'm sure. But the point is that I don't think about it anymore. It's not a conscious thought. And so, you know, maybe it's a decision. Maybe it's behind it. You know, maybe it is guiding my decisions and I don't even know it. I doubt it. I've spent 10 years thinking about it. Pretty sure I'd notice. But, you know, instead I can just wear, it's like, what will I be comfortable wearing today? You know, like, you know, how will I be comfortable? What situations will I be comfortable in? And why am I comfortable? If I'm uncomfortable in something, then, you know, but it's not this thing that guides it anymore that I was obsessed with for so long, so many people are obsessed with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a certain freedom.
Awesome. and so now one of the biggest obstacles for trans people is usually receiving, like, medical care. Mm-hmm. And feeling comfortable enough to share, you know, things that happen to your private body. Have you ever felt any struggles in receiving medical care, even, like, feeling comfortable in going out and searching for it? And then if you do search for it, how do you feel once you're in there?
Yeah, I haven't received problems with it. I think I've been lucky enough that when I have gone and received medical care, you know, I haven't received any sort of prejudice or discrimination or anything like that. However, I will admit, and I'm perfectly aware that, you know, this might contradict earlier things. I don't know. It's what women. I contradict myself. I contain multitudes. I hate going to the doctor, and specifically I hate going to the gyno, and I haven't. I've gone once in my life, and I'm 30 years old, and that's really sad. And most of the people, the women who care about me in my life that have the intimacy enough to say so, harp at me about it.
Right.
Very, 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 very often in a week. because it's not healthy, but I really, really, really don't like the idea. I'm radically uncomfortable with the idea of some stranger, you know, having access to, it's like, no, there are two people that have access to down there, and one of them is me, and one of them is not the doctor. I don't like that. You have no permission to have that level of intimacy with me, because I don't know what level of respect you have for me. I don't know what you think of me. I don't know what you connotate with the fact that I have these parts. I don't have any control over your view of me, and that's not a conversational bit right now. We're not going to stop and talk about identity. You know, it's just, I don't like it at all, and I need to set that aside and go to the doctor, but, you know, I'm going to eventually, but yeah, I'll admit that right now, I really don't like going to the gyno. It makes me incredibly uncomfortable, but I've been lucky enough not to be discriminated against when I have gone to the doctor.
Okay.
And I think it's probably because, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm, you know, I generally try to be amiable, and I don't make a big thing about it when they call me ma'am, and I find it amusing
mm-hmm.
when they call, you know, things like that, so.
Okay, good. So it's not, like, negative reasons. And,
no.
Like, and I understand, like, issues of privacy, but have you ever played out a scenario in your head, related to the gynecologist, since you feel so uncomfortable and going,
mm-hmm.
have you ever played out, like, what do you think could possibly happen, even though you know this... that they're not going to be like, okay, so while I'm down here, let's talk about your identity, because this looks
right.
really weird to me. So, like, what do you feel? And I'm not trying to convince you to go. I just
no.
want to know, like, what do you feel could possibly happen?
I don't know. And I don't think that it's that I have these, like, I have any sort of horror fantasy or anything like that. Like, gynecologists are perfectly sensible people, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not anything that I think that I think they would do or anything like that. It's just the concept of it just makes me uncomfortable. Like, I do have a rather, like I said before, I do feel very rather indifferent about, you know, like, I don't feel strongly about my body one way or another. But at the same time, you know, I'm not completely indifferent to it. You know, my body does have, having this body does have its connotations, and it does have its meanings. You know, it does, I do have a relationship with it, whether, you know, whatever other issues arise, and, like, it's private, you know, like, it's, you know, you bear your body, you have your body, and, you know, that's, like, the ultimate vulnerability, you know, it's, you're outside of any trappings of identity, and you're outside of any control, you know, you just, there's your body, and there's nothing you can do about how people see it, you know, like, you could be in, I mean, I'm self-conscious about it, you know, for all the reasons that I've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's like, and then conversely, like they say, your body is your temple, you know, like, you work as hard as most people do to have respect for your own body and rise above the typical issues, especially female-bodied people, the typical issues that come with being a female-bodied person in this
yeah.
society, you work that hard to then have your self-respect for that body. The only way to do that is by then being like, you know what, fuck it, this is my body, it is my temple, you know, it is in a way, this body is sacred, it is where my soul lives, it is my, you know, this, I consciously chose not to change it, even though I'm transgendered enough that I really, most people in my position would have. I consciously chose to remain in this body and keep it as it is. Not even any hormones, nothing. You know, I hardly even take Advil, you know, I leave it as it is, you know. I tried my best to take care of it, even though I like wings and, you know, beer. You know, like, it's just, you have your relationship with your body, and then it's just like, then... And this doesn't, it's not logical, but then you go into this, you know, into this appointment where this person basically is just like, you know, they have to, it's their job to treat it like a machine, to treat it like this building that they need to fix a few bricks on, and, you know, it's just like, oh, you know, you mind if I stick my arm up in you and look around in there? Yeah, no problem, right? It's just like, yeah, you know, why don't you just kick the temple walls a few times too, you know? There's no, you know, no sacrilege happening here. Get your hands off of my body. Anybody has put their hands on my body, there's a specific amount of permission that, you know, needs to be done. There's a specific amount of choice that I want to have, and you placing your hands on my body like I'm a goddamn robot, you know? And I don't have much of a choice. I have to go to the gyno. I have to go to the doctor. You are specialized in a certain amount of care that I can't provide myself. I really don't have much choice. I can either die because of certain sicknesses, risk being a certain amount of sick, you know, like you can either never go to the doctor, risk a certain amount of illness, certain illness, probably, or you can go, and your only other choice is to go to this person, this stranger, and, you know, unless you're dating a gynecologist, you know, you have to go to the stranger that's gonna, you know, manhandle you as gently as they're trained to, I'm sure. I don't just... All of that goes into it. It's just... I just... It's tied in with a bunch of stuff, but it just makes me so uncomfortable for illogical reasons that I overthink.
Well, that seems fair. I mean, you know, to each his own.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did say once before that you have performed as a drag king, right?
Yes.
Okay. So then... So why did you perform? Why did you choose to perform as a drag king?
It's fun. I'm an attention whore. You know, I'm a spoken word performer. I probably should have gone in the theater a while back, but I can't memorize anything for shit. You know, I'm a ham. I like being on stage. You know, I definitely, that's genetic. I'm pretty sure that's genetic. I have a lot of performers in my blood, both of my bloodlines. So it really is, I ended up getting up on stage and performing and everything appeals to me. And that seemed like a lot of fun, you know, you get up there and you know, it's like, you know, what is it, lip sync cabaret, you know, and you go up there and you camp up, you know, you create a campy extreme of yourself or a part of yourself, because most drag kings, you know, they take, you know, they're like, either take a part of themselves or a part of, you know, I've heard a lot of drag kings and they like take a specific kind of masculinity and they just camp it up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of drag kings that take it very seriously and they don't try not to make it campy at all. Like, I know that there's a type of drag king that makes it, that specifically believe, they camp it up. That's what a drag king is. They camp. You know, it's like mm-hmm. drag queens, that it's camped up. It's femininity taken to the extreme. And then drag kings is masculinity taken to the extreme. But I know there's a sect of drag kings that then is like, no, you know, I'm a female-bodied person, but, or, you know, whether I'm trans or not, or what are this, I'd like to perform masculinity, but I don't want to camp it up. You know, like, I know that there's, for me, I didn't really think about it all that much. I couldn't really pass by more than a college boy. Like, I tried one time I tried it was really unfortunate, George Michael, when he had that really big mustache and the sort of that line, you know, with a really lot around his lips, lots of, you remember that, you know,
yeah,
under his lips, a lot of hair, and then down there, and I looked like one of my uncles, and it was just unfortunate. I looked really ridiculous. It did not work at all because I have a baby face, so most of the time I was only able to pass off having a little like soul patch and some sideburns and being a college boy. So, it was only maybe a little extra masculinity than I normally have. I didn't really perform the masculinity that much differently than I already live day to day. You know, I added some facial hair essentially, and then I just went up there and did my swaggery, pseudo charming hamminess to a song. You know, that was my type of drag king.
Okay. So did you have, like, when you did perform, how did you plan your performances?
I performed with for the most part, I performed as part of a group, and I was part mostly of the group pieces, that we did. It was either whole group pieces, or I worked with a lot with my friend Lou, one of my very best friends, who's basically me, but thinner and blonde. And a little older. And so we would sort of be like yin yang in the performances a lot of the time. So we were able to, it was really interesting because we did pieces that really emphasized, you know, that we're sort of light and dark, but it should be really a lot, really look a lot alike in most other ways.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we sort of played off. And so it was mostly group, you know, like duo pieces that we worked together. And she's very talented in coming up with like choreography and like thinking up that sort of thing. And so we would sort of play off of each other in that sense and come up. We would like just drive around and listen to songs and go, oh, let's do that one. And so then we'd listen to the song. Oh, it would be cool if we did this and this and this. And then we'd rehearse it and stuff like that. The few times that I did do solo pieces, I never really physically rehearsed a lot of the time. For as much of a stage whore as I tend to be, I also tend to be really, really shy one-on-one when it comes to performing. Like, I've worked through it a lot, but, you know, just rehearsing in front of one person, you know, or alone up on stage kind of would make me really nervous. So a lot of times I would lay it completely out in my head and I'd memorize the song and, you know, I'd sort of be in La La Land up until the performance just because I'd be going over the entire thing, you know, over and over and over again. It usually wouldn't have required a lot of choreography, specific choreography on my part. A lot of times it would be more theatrical in the sense that I would create a character. Like I did, for example, I did Cellophane, Mr. Cellophane from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would create a specific character, you know, and there's a certain way. It's like, you know, like a Broadway musical where it's just like, it's just this character that, you know, maybe there's a dance move here or there, but they are relating something to a group of people. And so that's how I would sort of go at it. I would act on that stage, you know, in this sort of character that my drag king persona would take on, you know. I'd be Mr. Cellophane, this down and out, sorry, you know, blue collar guy or whatever. So it wouldn't require a lot of choreography. It would be a lot more of a sort of, what do they call it? Method acting. In a sense, you know, I would have my props, you know, and I would have my costume. I would always have a specific kind of costume, that sort of thing. So that's more the type of drag that I did. A little bit more theatrical. There's a lot of pieces that I was never able to do because it was just way too much overtly, okay, you want to do, like, basically a small play. Like, that's just not drag kingy. You know, people are coming to see a drag king show. They're not coming to see a performance piece a la Anita Franco, like Tori Amos, whatever. This isn't that kind of show.
So in that respect, did you ever have, like, a constant persona, like a drag king persona that you... that you performed, or was it just depending on?
Not really, because when I was doing drag, Johnny Rocket itself started when I moved to Asheville when I was 20, 21 years old. And I decided, I had thought and thought and thought and thought and realized that I can create myself. You know, I can stop for a second in my life and I can choose who I want to be. What do I want to act like? What do I want to, you know, like, it was social persona and this and that. And I realized that it was really a choice. You know, you can just, it's just a series of choices day to day. And so I moved to, just like being on stage, basically, I was thinking. And I had experience being on stage, being a poet and being in the spoken word community and everything for a long time. So I sort of went at it that way, and I moved to Asheville, and I reasoned that you can't rightly recreate yourself and stay with the same name. And I'd gone through a few different names by that point, trying different... the unfortunate judgment to go by Rocco for a while. Really bad idea. That wasn't intentional. So moving there, I thought, and I really didn't know about the diner, I swear. At that point, I had no idea that there was a diner named Johnny Rocket. And I was driving to Asheville. I was like, you know, I think I'm going to go Johnny Rocket. I like that name. And so I went. And it wasn't so much specifically a drag king persona that I created. It was more like, no, I'm just recreating an entire persona. And that persona will extend itself also on stage. And then, like I said, you know, like, I was, at that point, I decided I am going to be Johnny Rocket. You know, I'm going to create this person, and eventually, you know, and then eventually it's just, you know, it became me, you know, I became, you know, which was nice, you know, because then you stop and you should, you know, like, anybody should try that. It's just like, yeah, like, let me decide what my characteristics are going to be, you know? It's, let me stop the whole gravy train from childhood of just sort of being constructed by your childhood and circumstances. Let me just quit that altogether and just stop. I'm choosing who I want to be. I'm going to make that choice consciously under the understanding that everything is a choice. And so that's how that happened. And then when I went and did drag, it wasn't so much that I was going to be this persona, this other person on stage, but that every piece afforded me the opportunity to be yet another person. And so I was Mr. Cellophane, you know, during this piece, and we did one show that was sort of a leather themed show, and so we did father figure, and so I, you know, it's a sort of like the acting out, like sort of theatrically acting out whipping and this and that, and it's like nothing crazy, but you know, just sort of like it's different roles that then you go up and you did, like, what was another one, you know, I think I did Faith, and you know, you can go up there and you're going to be an Elvis persona doing this, doing Jailhouse Rock, you know, and you're going to be sort of a slick, you know, lip curling kind of. So every number in drag sort of afforded me the possibility, the opportunity to act out this other person for just a few minutes. So that's more how I went at it. The persona, the Johnny Rocket persona, performance persona, was just sort of a constant thing that eventually just became me.
Okay, so I would assume then you find your drag king performances and your, like, daily gender comportment mm-hmm. to be, like, a bi-directional kind of relationship. But how would you say one affects the other? Would you say, like, your drag king performances maybe influenced your daily gender comportment more, or was it the other way around?
I think that this could go for also doing spoken word and everything, too, that the performance eventually affected my day-to-day life, because when you go on stage, you know, you could be, and this is just my observation that, and my experience, that you could be self-conscious, you can be shy, you could be unsure of yourself and insecure day-to-day, but for me, I would go on stage and all of that would fall off, you know. I go on stage and, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm comfortable, you know, and you perform and you're confident and you're just having fun, you know. It's not so much that I would be, like, overtly confident, that I would be, you know, overtly, you know, sure of myself and cocky and this and that. I would just be comfortable up there, and so, you know, I would be, you know, sort of, you know, I would go up there and it would, because of that level of comfort, and I would be, you know, sort of charming, semi, you know, like have fun and just all the super, whatever super confidence sort of allows me to have up there. And after a while, I realized that was the difference. That was really the biggest difference. It's just that when I would go on stage, it wasn't that I had this persona when I went on stage. It's just that when I went on stage, I was like, my day-to-day person, but without this insecurity. Without any insecurity, you know, I was just confident and and sure of myself, self-assured and happy, and that's where everything else came from. And so once I realized that, I was like, it would be nice to have that then the rest of the time too. And so I tried to start letting that sort of come into the rest of my life also. You know, how successful I've been, I don't know, but I do know that I'm really great at phone job interviews. That has been observed by my friends. Are like, you've got to be kidding me, seriously, like, can you just be that's charming the rest of the time? I was like, oh, thanks, appreciate it.
No,
right.
So now you've mentioned that your identity is definitely based upon choices that you make, very conscious choices that you make. Is there any part of it that is, you would consider natural or organic?
I think so.
Or in the world of that, or the world of academia, essential to
I think so, to your because identity. Yeah, I think so. And I don't know what part of it is or where it comes from, or, you know, like, I've thought about it and I realize that I'm not I know, I'm not going to pretend to, it's like, you know, maybe it's yin and yang. Maybe it's maybe energy has a certain natural leanings, you know, maybe it's true that some people have yang and some people have yin. And I don't know where it comes from, but yeah, I think that there is, because I do know that there is a, for one reason or another, there is a certain level of intense discomfort when I wear a skirt and heels, for example. You know, when I dress in the trappings of femininity and, you know, or have to behave through in the trappings of femininity in a setting that I'm not, I don't have the luxury of being amused by it, you know, or just saying it as a drag, you know, where a lot of times it's like, you know, this is hilarious, whatever. For one reason or another, like, no, I have no choice here. You know, I'm having to wear, this never happens anymore. It's just like, you know, I have to wear makeup and heels and or dress as a female. I have to, that makes me intensely uncomfortable for one reason or another, you know, like being femininely gendered, being masculinely gendered. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, like it sort of rubs the antagonistic troublemaker in me. You know, raw, or it's just like, no, I just want to cause trouble and make everybody confused. But it doesn't make me uncomfortable the way that being feminine, you know, makes me uncomfortable, you know. So, yeah, I think that there is. I don't know where it comes from or what it is, but I think that there is some sort of component in there that's sort of leans a certain way.
Right. I mean, most people would probably say that the basis or the performance of being masculine is not being feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can characterize explicitly feminine,
mm-hmm.
but it's so hard to characterize
masculine. Absolutely.
So
that's true.
It's almost like being masculine is just not being feminine. Right?
I can see
and
that.
And that's just about it. So I can see where you would say that. Just one thing that just came to mind, which I probably should have asked you a long time ago, but I'm going to ask you now before we end. What benefits or what kind of permission did packing and binding afford you? How did you feel? Can you, like, describe that a bit?
That was interesting.
And how long did you do it for?
Oh,
And when? Like, was it daily?
Yeah, it was mainly in my very early 20s, where I went through a very intensely trans period. And it was a very interesting experience. It was good for a good, like, 6 months to a week,
okay.
You know, or so. And, yeah, every day in and day out, I don't know that I would pack every day, but I definitely was binding for a good year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And for one thing, physically speaking, binding is incredibly uncomfortable and does incredible harm to the actual breast tissue.
And was it painful?
Yes, it's very painful. And especially, and then, like, so you can have the ACE bandage or whatever different type of binding that than trans men and tranny boys would sort of pirate, you know, like, say, waist binders or whatever, and then they would just use up in their chest, which would then limit your mobility. For one thing, I'm going to say that it would limit your mobility because you're going to do that and all of a sudden it all slips out.
Right.
And then it would harm your actual chest tissue. Or then they started coming up with vests specifically for this purpose that are hell to get on. Like, because they're supposed to be tight enough to flatten you. So then getting them on over everything, painful as anything. But once they were on, I have to say, it was a really interesting experience because it's a certain, I don't know how to put it. Like, I would go around and I'd be binding and I'd be packing and really, that's all people need. That and short hair is all people need to be like, okay, so you're a guy. I'm comfortable with that. You can have the prettiest face around, but you're wearing a tight white shirt, and you're binding, and you're wearing normal jeans, and there's something there, so obviously, you're just an unfortunately pretty guy. Okay, that's cool. And so, it was a very interesting experience going through society, being unquestionably accepted as a male. You know, and it's like all of a sudden you have the male privilege and, you know, you have all of this experience that for the rest of the time, you know, it's like I'm pretty comfortable being androgynous and being in the middle and I don't really need all the trappings of being a guy in this society. So I remembered back then it was really interesting. It was really, really interesting. And I worked in kitchens and whatnot. And I had some jobs where you know, I'm around some pretty typically asshole guys, you know, like macho, you know, like frat guys and whatnot like that. So it took a lot of self-awareness to not fall into, okay, you look like them and you're around them and you're young enough to be impressionable. So it took a lot of self-awareness and a lot of basically slaps upon the back of my head from my friends to not act like that, to not start really buying into it and start acting like a frat boy, basically. Right. You know, like, it was interesting to see how easy it is to fall into being a guy in this society, in a sense. You know, if you go to the trouble of looking the part, you know, it's like society's just going to accept you because all of a sudden you're not confusing anymore. Hallelujah. You are normative again. Bless the Lord. Great. That's all we need. Sweet. And so, you know, it was a very interesting experience in that sense. You know, it was a very interesting sociological sort of, anthropological sort of study of behavior, you know. So.
And now if you felt, I'm going to say this because you didn't say it, I'm going to assume, let's say you felt comfortable or you felt this privilege, did it make it easier for you to create relationships, whether they were intimate or like with your friends or family members when they noticed this?
I don't think it affected it that much because, for one thing, I was around most of my crew and the people that I would surround myself most of the time and have relationships with were all my friends and whatnot were, you know, pretty queer people, you know, on the whole. And so that, for one thing, that kept me sort of in line and sort of kept reminding me, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, you're not, I would get called on it. It's just like, dude, Johnny, stop looking like a frat boy. First of all, take off that plaid shirt. You are not a frat boy. You're not allowed to start wearing the backwards hats like an idiot like that. No, I'm sorry. You know, like, goofing around, but still, you know, it's like, and so I don't think it affected it that much because in the end, whether I was binding or whether I wasn't binding, I was still, you know, I still had this a specific sort of identity. I was still queer, you know, I was still Johnny, I was still a drag king, I was still, you know, I was still who I was to these people,
right.
You know, and which I think is probably why, you know, like a couple of years later, I was just like, yeah, it's not necessary. I don't feel so attached to it anymore. It's not affecting my day-to-day life, and it's just physically uncomfortable, you know. It's not going to make a difference whether I bind or whether I don't, and I'd really rather not be in pain.
Definitely. So you did that for like 6 months or a year?
I bound. I wore that vest for at least a year, if not a little longer. I only did packing for a little bit. Okay. In the end, it's not practical, and it's very uncomfortable.
I'm sure, huh?
Yeah,
it was like you just teach yourself how to sit down.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, this is just feels a little silly. This is just I experimented with it, but it was the binding really that I did for a while.
Because like you said, you almost didn't even need the bottom part, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time I wear jeans that are about this baggy, so it's the beauty of jeans, you know.
Right. one last thing. Well, not last thing at all. But I didn't ask this in the beginning. What's your religious affiliation? If you have any at all.
I don't really have any. If anything, I would say that I feel an affinity for Taoism. But I grew up, I grew up in a very non-religious household. I mean, my grandma is very, my mom grew up Catholic. My grandma, I think, you know, like, they're very Christian, Latin Christian family and whatnot. But I think it's sort of a backlash towards growing up intensely religious. And then, you know, Latin culture. Both of my parents aren't really religious, so I grew up actually going to I would spend the night at my cousin's, and I would go to Baptist church and come back after church and be like, Mom, why is the Ouija board sending me to hell? Mom was like, well, honey, let me tell you about a power and institutions. Let me tell you about the church. And she would give me a lecture.
God, you're so lucky.
Yeah, I know. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Yeah. So, yeah, not really any affiliation.
Okay, right on. So, do you have any other stories, you know, that you'd like to share, like, directly involving your, like, daily gender comportment or anything you want to add pretty much at all?
I think we covered it.
New thoughts, right? I'm sure.
Yeah. I think you have enough to work with.
I hope so. I think so, too. and then my last question is, do you have any questions for me? Okay. So again, I want to thank you for coming out and doing my interview, for being my first interview.
No
this
problem.
Was awesome.
Thank you.
And yeah, I hope you have a great day.
Thanks. All you right. too.
Thanks.